following is a presentation of Radio Free Minnesota.
He portrays himself and tries to call himself Mr. Right. Mr. Right.
We got a strong team. Jason Lewis. Ready to contribute. Ready to fight for what's best for this country. Jason Lewis. Thank you and God bless you. Jason Lewis.
He rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day. He made his blazing saddle a torch to light the way. When outlaws
And we are back with our continuing coverage of the tragedy in Minneapolis on FM News Talk 100.3 KTLK. I am Jason Lewis alongside, well, not alongside, but joined by Melissa Hughes. Now, if you don't know who Ms. Hughes is, her car was actually crushed underneath another car that fell from the massive collapsing bridge yesterday over the Mississippi. All she thought about was her three-month-old daughter, she's told the press, and now she's here with us. Melissa, congratulations, and we're so glad to be able to talk with you today.
Thank you.
Obviously, you've been getting inundated by media requests now, a heck of a way to get your 15 minutes of fame. But tell us what went through your mind. I know this question is redundant these days, but tell us what went through your mind. Well, first of all, tell us where you were on the bridge.
Yep, I was southbound, and actually the most eastern section that broke off, so the first section or last section, however you want to look at it,
mm-hmm.
broke off.
So you were over the embankment or over the water?
Embankment.
You were just over the embankment, so it broke right, down. Yeah. It broke off and fell down towards the river.
Not even towards the river. Actually, 8th Street was right below us.
Okay. And so you just all of a sudden fell.
Yeah, it was this free fall feeling actually twice, and then a minivan was in front of me that I felt like it was coming towards me, and I was standing on my brake. And I felt, do you need to stand on my brake? If this minivan was going to hit me, or if I, you know.
So what was the highway? What angle was the highway when you were falling? Was it pointing up towards the sky, or was it pointing down?
The front end of my car, when it was done, was pointing up towards the sky, about a 45-degree angle.
So the cars were coming back at you.
Correct.
And you were hitting your brake as an instant reaction, or kind of a reactive instinct?
Yeah, I just grabbed the steering wheel and hit the brakes just because I wanted to stop moving. And I don't know if it was the free fall or if I was sliding or what the movement was that I was feeling, but I just wanted that to stop.
Now, were you moving when the bridge started to go?
I don't know if we were moving or we were at a standstill. That's a blur for me. I know if we were moving, it was barely.
And did you hear anything?
I had my windows up, my air conditioning on, and my radio on. I know a lot of people are talking about the sounds that they heard beforehand, but I don't recall sounds. My thing that I noticed first was visual, and that was things kind of suspended in air. You know, the orange barrel.
Right.
I swear I saw a construction worker suspended in air. Things like that.
You know, everybody talks about these sorts of surreal happenings. I mean, certainly most of us don't go through what you did, but they talk about things going in slow motion, and yet if you take a look at this in real time, the bridge falls in about 4 seconds.
Right, yeah, it felt like it took a while.
And it fell twice, you say?
It felt like I fell twice, yeah. It was two sessions of a free fall feeling, and then that stopped, and then there was a huge crash noise. And I looked in my rearview mirror, and it was my back window getting shattered inward. And there was something there. At the time, I didn't know what it was. It wasn't until I was out of the vehicle and standing in a parking lot looking back at my car that I realized that there was a truck on top of my car.
Your truck on top of your car. And the driver of that car, do we know what happened?
I have no idea. I have not heard any Reports of the driver of that car. I have no idea where that person is or how they turned out.
At what point along this scenario did you get out of the car then?
After that smash, I frantically was trying to find my phone within my car, and I turned off the radio and put on my parking brake, and I saw somebody standing to the left of me on the road screaming and grabbing his back in pain and falling to his knees. After that, I started hearing people, you know, yelling, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And somebody came up to my door and opened it and asked if I was okay.
So this took a while. You were kind of frozen in place for a while.
Yeah, and I mean, it probably was seconds, because when I look at my caller ID, it was 6:06 when I called home, and I didn't call home until after that person had gotten me out of my car, walked me down off of the bridge, and
How did all the people get to you? They were other civilians traveling on the bridge that came out all right and just came to your aid, or were they bystanders or what?
Yeah, there's a business that is right next to the Don 8th and 2nd, I believe. There's a business there, and the employees had come out of that business, and I was assuming that was an employee that came and got me out of my car. The employees were, you know, out helping the victims of the section of the bridge that we were on.
And once you get out of the car, you realize, my God, another car fell on me. All during that time, I read one report where you said you were just thinking of your three-month-old.
Yeah, first I was calling my husband and have him bring the baby to me. I just wanted to have my baby in my arms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly understandable.
Yes. Once he got there, we just stood, and that was when I finally cried, was once they got there.
Realizing how close it was. Well, how did they get you off the bridge? How were you suspended? You were still above the river level then?
There was not river below us. There's land below us.
Yeah, you were on the embankment, so you were technically above it, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just walked down and walked onto 8th Street and into this parking lot of this business.
And at that point, it all starts to sink in as it did today. Tell me the difference between your feelings last night after it happened and your feelings today.
Last night, disbelief and shock. I guess I still feel that. Today's just been a whirlwind of lots of media today. So.
Right. What kind of questions are you getting? Tell Olivia hi for us, will you?
Yes. She's crying in the back seat. Sorry.
That's quite all right. What baby crying probably never sounded so good. What kind of questions have you gotten from the media, my illustrious colleagues, and how silly have they been?
Nothing really silly. It was most of the same questions. You know, what were you thinking?
Not until this interview, right?
Yeah, no, you didn't want to ask the same question. Sorry to tell you that.
But I haven't, you know, have you been egged on by anybody suggesting whom do you blame for this, Melissa?
I haven't asked a few times, do I blame anybody? Am I angry? I haven't gotten to that point yet. Maybe, you know, there's the whole different steps of grief or whatever they call it that you go through.
Right.
And, you know, I think blame and anger is one of them, and I haven't gotten to that yet, and I don't know if I will or not.
Well, that's a good thing, because we have to look at this as emotional as it is for you, obviously, and as glad we are to see you safe and sound. We still have to look at these things in a logical and reasonable way.
Right.
Melissa Hughes, thanks so much, and we're so glad you could join us today, and be well and enjoy your 15 minutes, if that's any consolation.
Thanks.
Melissa Hughes, she's a survivor of yesterday's horrific collapsing of the bridge over the Mississippi. She was in her car. It was crushed underneath another car coming home. She gets out of the car, and the first thing she asks her husband is to bring her three-month-old to the site so she could hold her. A very heartrending story from Melissa there. I'm Jason Lewis. More of this and your calls when we return. Well, I'm afraid we're going to compound the tragedy here, folks, and make this thing a genuine political football. How do I know? All the big news anchors are in town, I'm told. So once the big media get involved, look for political angles in all of this instead of trying to heal the wounds from a tragedy. We will continue to monitor this on Radio Free Minnesota. You won't get the kind of critique that I'm giving anyplace else because they've decided to circle the wagons on the other side, as it were. Now, maybe we can come to one consensus, though, with our liberal friends. If they're concerned about funding and infrastructure, can we not all agree now that the government at every level, I mean, the federal government contributes to infrastructure, certainly in this particular case with a federal interstate highway, but state governments responsible for building the state roads and the trunk highway system. Can we not all agree now that we should spend less on non-road government projects and more on roads and bridges? I mean, if I'm thinking strategically as a politician, which apparently the left is already doing in their zeal to exploit this, that's the way I would think. The next time Ms. Klobuchar or Mr. Coleman, Nick, the columnist, or any other liberal comes out and says it's a problem because of lack of funding, well, I would say, Senator Klobuchar, then let us agree that we need to cut the areas of government that is not devoted to real infrastructure and take those savings and increase the budget for infrastructure, roads, and bridges. Can we agree on that, Ms. Klobuchar? Oh, no. We can't cut the other parts of the budget. You see, the real problem here, folks, is that while the government has been busy spending your money on non-essential items, they have been shortchanging you on the very legitimate items of government that they're supposed to provide, whether it's the ability to water your lawn when it gets hot, or the ability to protect you in a time of crisis or national defense, or whether it's ability for police departments to patrol the streets. The legitimate functions of government have all been shortchanged deliberately so we can spend more money on income transfer payments, more money on public works jobs like light rail, more money on health and human services, more money so the Minnesota Education Association can hire yet more quote-unquote preschool teachers. And all the while, the legitimate functions of government go underfunded. So when it gets warm, they cut off the water. When crime goes up, we don't have enough cops. And when we need transportation, a bridge collapses. So if they want to go down this road and start the blame game, let the fireworks begin. Stephen in St. Paul, you're on the Jason Lewis Show. Hi.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for taking my call.
Glad to.
Say, I just wanted to make a point that I haven't heard anyone talking about yet with the bridge collapsing. Four of the lanes were under construction and closed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't that put only about half the weight that the bridge should have been holding, actually, on the bridge when it collapsed?
Assuming that when all eight lanes are open, you don't have a traffic jam, or you would have the same sort of traffic jam that you would have normally, yes. I mean, if you've got all eight lanes open, but traffic is moving along swimmingly, you would have less of a stress on the bridge than if you would have had maybe one or two lanes shut, but traffic at a standstill.
Right. It was just a point I wanted to bring up, because I know, like, during rush hour, normally, you know, at least going out of the city, all four lanes are pretty backed up anyways.
Yeah, that's true, and so you may have a point. But again, these things are cumulative. I mean, the fact of the matter is you're looking at 40 years of wear and tear. If those theorists or experts who say it could be due to applying the salt in the winter or the salt spray, apparently with these automatic dispensers, and that has corroded some of the underpinnings of the bridge, if that was true, I mean, you could have one individual walk, and it could just be the last pound that trips the catastrophe.
Right. Just a point I wanted to throw out there that I hadn't heard yet.
It is a fair point. Stephen, thanks for the call. Samantha in Minneapolis, I appreciate your patience today. You're on FM News Talk 100.3 KTLK.
Hi. I would like to start out by saying that I am first off a recovering Democrat, as I will call myself.
Ah, you've gotten a W-2 then. Everybody's a liberal until they get their first W-2, and then they see the withholding and say, gee, those conservatives don't sound too bad after all.
Yes, exactly. So you're going to have to bear with me because I'm brand new to all this politics stuff. I have a friend who basically informs me about everything that I need to know. She's like my news anchor. But I was talking to her earlier today, and she brought up this point that Amy Klobuchar stated, you know, that taxes, we need money for this, we need money for that. And I was really annoyed by her statement because it seemed like she was putting so much energy into, you know, making this more of a political issue rather than a humanitarian catastrophe. And to hear that woman's statement, who was trapped underneath another car, you know, seeking her husband and trying to save her life, I mean, the struggles that this woman is going through, mm-hmm. it just sounds like they're exploiting the crap out of what these people are suffering through.
They are. Did you hear the Senate Majority Leader today, Harry Reid? He took this opportunity to suggest and infer that under President Bush, our infrastructure is crumbling nationwide. Nick Coleman laid the blame for this tragedy on the backs of the No New Taxes group. Anybody that doesn't want to raise taxes is somehow responsible for this. I could go on and on. Len Levine, Elwin Tinklenberg, former bureaucrats under more liberal administrations, all suggesting that somehow, you know, $2.5 billion a year at the state level isn't enough money to spend on transportation. When do these guys ever look at the way we're spending money? You know,
I completely agree with you.
What you get from these bureaucrats and what the liberals really are they're big government people. We talk about business people. Well, we can't trust you, Lewis. You're a businessman. Well, these people are government people. And every time you have a catastrophe that the government was supposed to prevent, they end up circling the wagons and say, well, it couldn't be us. It couldn't be MnDOT. It couldn't be the federal DOT. It must be due to a lack of funding.
I agree with you. And you know what? That's exactly where it seems like a lot of the Democratic problems arise, is that I'm supposed to give money now for fixing or restoring or making every other bridge in the city much better, which I'm more than happy to do if that's where it's really going to go to. But at the same time, what about, I mean, you can't tell me that the woman who is stuck underneath, you know, somebody else's vehicle isn't suffering through some serious PTSD. I'm sorry, I'm a little psychological on you, but
right.
I work
post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Huh?
Post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's probably 1,000 people, well, however many people were stuck in that situation, and people who are losing family members and friends. Why is it that we always continue to look in hindsight, who did this, what did this, what caused it, instead of what can we do to help?
You're doing
what can we do
right.
to make things better for someone else?
You couldn't be more right. What's going on with the finger pointing and the funding game is, Samantha, the liberal left and the big government type circling the wagons, trying to deflect blame from what could be government incompetence, could be bureaucratic incompetence, are trivializing the trauma that Melissa and the others and the families of the deceased are going through in the name of political expediency. It is more than shameful. Samantha, thanks. Right on. We'll get to you more of your phone calls as our continuing coverage of the disaster in the Twin Cities continues right here on FM News Talk 100.3 KTLK. Joining us now from Washington on the floor of the United States Senate is Senator Norm Coleman, who was here earlier in the day surveying the damage down there. Senator Coleman, thanks for joining us on this late notice on such a sad day.
It was a sad day. Yesterday was a day of horror in the Twin Cities. I think there will be some tough days ahead, Jason, as we move forward with the recovery process. There can be a lot of difficult stories to be told and images to be seen. So let's keep the folks who have been, you know, victimized, hurt by this impact. Let's keep them in our thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, amen to that. Isn't it amazing the reaction of the great folks of the upper Midwest? I mean,
yeah.
It really is remarkable. Not that we don't need federal help, and I know you're working on this. After all, it was a federal interstate. But the fact is, locally, we took charge yesterday and did the best we could.
And we did it both public-private. In other words, you had the institutions of government. As a former mayor, Jason, I remembered how little prepared or ill-prepared we were
right.
at 9/11. We couldn't communicate with each other. We didn't have interactive systems between the hospital operations and the police operations. So we learned, we changed, we trained, we trained, we trained. And yesterday, that day that you never thought, you know, you ever would prayed it would never come, came. Great tragedy. We responded. But the people responded, too. Acts of bravery, in addition to the first responders, the acts of bravery by Minnesotans that were in that water, that formed the links to pull people out. I think it's, I was really proud. I got to tell you, I just have a sense of great pride, extra pride today, being a Minnesotan. And I said that on the floor of the Senate, representing this great state. I said that a little while ago on the floor of the Senate.
How can we expedite once we get over the grieving and show the proper compassion in many forms for the deceased and the families of the victims? But we do have to, life does go on, and we need to rebuild this bridge. It's a major artery. through this community. How can we expedite the process to get this thing done, not in 2 years, but, you know, in 10 months?
Well, there have been instances with design build, with giving incentives to contractors to say, basically, you know, here's the deal. You come in this much ahead of schedule, and you'll get a benefit for it.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to do that using, by the way, Jason, good market principles.
How about some waivers from the federal government on the usual protocol?
And part of it, well, that will also be part. Let me step back. There are two things that have to go on. One, and as we grieve and as we mourn, we are beginning the process of finding out what happened. So the head of the National Transportation Safety Board was in town. He flew in early in the morning. I spoke to him last night. He literally hopped on a plane. He's got what they call a go team. They came in, and they're trying to begin the process to figure out what happened. We have to do that. At the same time, we have to rebuild. And so there may be a series of things that we have to waive. I'm working on that. Working bipartisan with Senator Klobuchar, the delegation has come together. John Klein called me, and he's there in his office with Jim Jim Ramstead. He's got Tim Walz. So we've put aside the partisan, jerseys here at least. Now I can't say that's happening all over, and I don't know how long
It isn't happening. It's already started here.
Jason, that tears at my heart. Can we kind of put that aside and not do the finger pointing, not do the blame game, and can we simply say we suffered a tragedy? Let's figure out why it happened, make sure it never happens again, and then let's rebuild. And if we can do those things and then mourn for those and pray for those who have been impacted, that would be a good thing. And so I you're right, I have seen it in evidence now that the fingers being pointed. I hope we can get by that. I hope we can get past that in dealing with this tragedy.
Yeah, the Senate Majority Leader even suggested that earlier in the day when he said, well, we've got infrastructure crumbling all over the country right now, suggesting somehow this is, it happened yesterday or something. I mean, that really is beneath the gravity of the moment, isn't it?
I would hope that my colleagues could restrain from the temptation to point the finger of blame, to use this as an opportunity for a political attack, and can simply step back and say we suffered a tragedy. We've something terrible happened. By the way, we have to figure out what happened.
Right,
Jason,
right.
We got a lot of bridges in this country, many of them, by the way, have had designations called with structural problems.
Which doesn't mean they're unsafe. Nobody in government is saying, oh, this bridge is unsafe, let's keep it open.
No, and in fact, this bridge in particular had been, I believe, a more complete structural review. That's what the governor told me in 2004, but then he also said in 2005, 6, and 07, reviewed again. And so it's, quote, structurally deficient. What that means is that you got to fix it. And then there's a schedule to fix it. You don't shut it down. Jason, when I was mayor of St. Paul, we had a Wabash Street Bridge, which eventually I did knock down and did replace. We had stuff falling off of it for a while, and we had it checked on a regular basis all the time to make sure that it didn't put people in danger. So this is a bridge, one of, I believe, perhaps 40,000 in the country, about 3% in Minnesota. In some states, it's 40% of their bridges are in the same category. We have to, so that's the reality. But the bottom line is,
but that doesn't mean you don't ask tough questions. Well, I mean, there could be complacency in these bureaucracies like MnDOT or any Department of Transportation that simply does not spend the money in the right manner.
And so there have to be some very tough questions being asked. We have to kind of look in the mirror. We may be at a point where we have an aging infrastructure in this nation, and we have to be more aggressive than we've been. Let's ask the question. Let's step back. Let's first do the analysis.
Right.
You have the National Transportation Safety Board. You got the best people in the country. They are on the ground. They're in Minneapolis. They're beginning the painstaking process of literally, Jason, taking the parts of this bridge and laying them out on a floor in a warehouse somewhere in the Washington area, and piece by piece looking to see the stresses and the strains. A similar incident happened. The last time it happened in this country, similar incident, was in the mid-1980s, and we found out that a sheared bolt caused the entire bridge structure to collapse. We changed the system. We changed the inspection system. We changed a whole range of things. So that's not a problem anymore. But if there's something else that is a problem, let's identify it and then be committed to fixing it.
I know you're on the floor. You got to get back. One quick question. We need to rethink things, and maybe we ought to. I would like to eliminate it. Obviously, I'm more of a radical than you are or most people. But The fact is, maybe we need to take a look at that mass transit account that was created about 25 years ago and say, if we've got a crisis with real infrastructure, bridges and roads, maybe we ought to siphon a little more money out of the mass transit account and focus more on roads with our gas tax dollars that go to Washington, then come back here.
I'm a guy, Jason, as you know, I don't want to simply shoot at one to say we've got a problem in the other. I had somebody ask me what I think was an absurd question the other day, reported it today. Reporter said to me, the problem with bridges here and these problems is because we're spending money in Iraq.
Yeah, well, that's absurd.
Okay. So my point being, I think you raise a legitimate point about saying, where do we spend the dollars? Where are they most effective? I'm somebody who has had believed that transit can be part of the solution. I don't want to kind of, say one or the other, but I do think that we have to take a close look at what are we doing to make sure that our bridges are safe. Let's first find out what happened here.
Right.
Let's find out what happened here and then be prepared to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Norm Coleman, I know you're on the Senate floor. Got to get back. You've had a busy day. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule and joining us. We'll do it again sometime.
Great American, Jason. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Norm Coleman in Washington, D.C. He was here earlier in the day and flew back for voting on the Senate floor. I'm Jason Lewis, 18 now in front of 7. Stay tuned. Your calls, Jim, Lori, Mike, Todd, coming right up on KTLK. Yes, yes, I do agree. Funding is a problem. It must have been the cause of this. Therefore, we need to spend less on the inessentials or unessentials of government, non-essentials, and more on roads and bridges. Let's all agree on that, shall we? In Apple Valley, Jim, you're on Radio Free Minnesota with America's Mr. Right. That would be me, Jason Lewis. Welcome, sir.
Hello, Jason. Personally, welcome you back. You're a breath of common sense, and that's pretty rare around the Twin Cities area.
Seems like it these days, doesn't it?
Yeah, and of course our prayers go out to everybody who's involved in this tragedy, and a thanks to all the emergency personnel and volunteers that I've seen down there. I was just down there around for a couple of hours, and I left about 5:30 when I was around with the media. I'm a freelance photographer, and was up. Most of the media was huddled up on top of the parking ramp of the Holiday Inn there where they can oversee it.
Right.
And I just wanted to... I was listening to you on the way back, and I wanted to tell you what's being said off camera. You know, what you see is one thing.
Right.
When you're backing around them, they're all held around an editing machine or audio or something.
And trust me, I've spent many a years in the newsroom. I can tell you stories.
Obviously, yeah. But I was hearing comments that, just like you had talked about, everything from this being Bush's fault, being Pelosi's fault, being the conservatives' fault. I even heard, I don't know who the news crew was. I don't believe it was a local one because they're there from everywhere. I saw people from Iowa and Missouri and some Asian reporters. They were positive it was a terrorist attack. And I noted last night that it was probably not even 7 o'clock before even the major networks and the satellite networks started coming in with guesses as to what caused this. My concern is that they're all in such a rush to point the finger, to find blame, and at this point, you don't need that.
They're all conspiracy theorists.
Absolutely.
I want people to listen to what Jim's saying. Jim has been around the media, as we just heard. It's actually worse than what you see on television and hear in the radio and see in newsprint. Now, how does that make you feel, folks?
Oh, it's terrible. If you could get somebody behind the scenes... There were probably 45, 50 people up there, and Pelosi was up there. What was funny is, too, is one of the local news crews, not the anchors, but the people behind the scenes, two of them were trying to figure out who Pelosi was before he went up there. They figured he was somebody important because there were people hovering around him that looked like they were protecting him. Of course, they were. But they couldn't put their finger on who he was, which I thought was pretty unusual.
Remarkable, yeah. They need a story. You've got to understand they need a story, and their ideological bias is not going to allow them the news angle or the action line that would say, well, gee, maybe we ought to rethink light rail and take that money and redo our bridges. No, it's got to be something else. Now, you bring up a fascinating point, and to this we can thank people like Nick Coleman, and that is he is merely saying what most members of the press say behind our backs. I mean, when you talk about Michael Moore, Oliver Stone, or Nick Coleman, and people say, God, these guys are radical kooks. You know what? Most of them are that way. They just try to hold it back a little bit on air, and you're giving life or giving proof to that fact.
It really is you know, a lot of people hear people like me and other people in the conservative side of the media say this, and they don't believe you. They think we're the conspiracy people, but it's not. It's from the people I encountered when I was in school for media all the way through. I mean, it's ingrained in them. And if there isn't a story there, they'll make one up. I won't say they make it up. They will make it look like there's something there that's not. And another thing you said that I don't see why anybody would be surprised that the Democrats would attempt to exploit this. I mean, look what they did at Wellstone's funeral.
That's right. I mean, it's the Wellstone funeral redux in just a different circumstance.
Absolutely. It's any opportunity for a soapbox. There is no shame for them. They do not care. It's to the point I can remember.
What is it, by the way? What is it about freelance photographers in newsprint and in the media that seems to give them more of a common sense outlook? Every cameraman I talk to, every newsprint photographer I talk to, and you know they've done stories on me, they always seem to be more grounded, more close to, you know, the down to earth and more common sense than the reporter. What is it? Because you guys you're at the mercy of the market? You got to get hired or something? What is it?
I don't think that would be it, because if we were at the mercy of the market, then we would be way liberal leaning to get the acceptance that we need. I think it's personally that we aren't in front of a camera and we don't have the ego that's involved in that. Sure, I like to see my name on a byline,
yeah,
but that's not the important part. It's to get the image I want and to get the story out there. If I'm not worried about how I always said I got into photography so I didn't have to be in front of the camera.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. I few people have an ego as large as mine, but that is true. I'll concede that. However, what I do tell people is if I really wanted to be accepted and I really wanted to go far, I'd be a liberal in this business.
Oh, absolutely. The doors fly open. I mean, I don't...
Hey, Jim, I got to cut you off, buddy, but I mean, that's really a salient point. And Jim, who was there last night as a freelance photographer, heard the behind-the-scenes comments from the Fourth Estate. And folks, there is an agenda here, no matter what you might believe. Jim, thanks so much. I do appreciate it. We got to squeeze in one more break, and then we'll come back with Mike and Todd right after this on the Jason Lewis Show. Oh, wait a minute. Newsflash. I know. Dawn just informs me via email. Dawn just tells me, I know, it's global warming. Wait, have we heard that yet? I mean, if it's lack of funding, it must be global warming as well that caused this catastrophe yesterday. I mean, is anything beneath some of these people? 651-989-5855 and Ramsey, Mike, you're on the Jason Lewis Show.
Hey, Jason. I listen all the time. I try to pay attention to all the details, but I haven't heard anybody mention, like, when the bridge was built.
1967.
I mean, was it supposed to last 50 years or 70 years, or has anybody said, you know?
Oh, well, there are bridges that are far older than that. I'm just
wondering, you know, how early did it fail, or did somebody, was it do some serious work and somebody decided to put it off or something?
Well, it has had an inspection the last couple of years, 2005 and 2006, and the word we get is an inspection was being undertaken as recently as yesterday, or getting ready to be done. So it's not as though... You know, it's not as though people weren't looking at this thing.
Well, yeah, that's why I was just wondering why. I mean, was it supposed to last 100 years or?
You know? I don't know what the normal lifespan is, but my guess is with repair and with current inspections, longer than 40 years.
Yeah. Okay, I was just wondering. I hadn't heard anybody actually say it. So.
Well, I think we'll find out in the coming days and weeks ahead as they go through this and we start to vet the whole process out. But interesting point, Mike. Appreciate your time tonight. Let's go to St. Paul. Todd, you'll wrap things up tonight for Radio Free Minnesota on a special edition of the Jason Lewis Show. Hi. Yes, Todd, go ahead, sir.
Yep, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to disagree with you about what you were saying earlier about cars moving at a full speed would have been less stressful. That actually would have been more stressful.
Well, why? Why is that? Because my impression of the physics of it all is that a car moving over a piece of land or a piece of infrastructure at a high rate of speed puts less stress than a car moving slower.
No, actually, people don't realize it, but any time any vehicle is moving over a solid object, whether it's asphalt, concrete, ice roads up in Alaska, all that, as you're traveling, you create a shockwave in front of you, and the faster you move, the tighter the ripples in that shockwave get in the surface of that material. And the more likely it is to actually cause a blowout in front of you.
Well, but Ice Road Truckers here on KTLK. No, but the point here is wasn't so much it might be more stressful on the road. What I was suggesting is the weight factor would be less.
Yeah, the weight would have been less, but that would have been overridden by the fact that you have
stress?
Cars moving at high speed, so you got a lot of those ripples hitting each other.
Well, you would have had more carnage, I do believe, at higher rates of speed.
Yeah, almost definitely.
Todd, great point. I appreciate the call. You may very well be correct, sir. See how open-minded we can be on the program. We've got very, very intelligent listeners. Todd, thanks so much. I'm Jason Lewis. It's been a sad couple of days. Hang in there, folks. Things will get better.